one interview that I did last week, one of the questions was, what's a question that you wish people would never ask you in interviews anymore? And I said anything relating to Playboy. To me, it's just like, it was not that big of a deal.
This is Noor Tagori, and she sounds like she's had enough. Despite being a successful journalist who's produced an award-winning docuseries turned podcast called Sold in America, she still got mistaken in Vogue for another Muslim woman. And in another publication, she got mistaken for a terrorist's wife. Admittedly, that's how I know her. Back in 2016, when she became the first hijab-wearing Muslim featured in Playboy, I became really interested in her career. Had she not sparked that controversy, I can't be so sure that I'd even know her name. But it turns out that that fallout was just a tiny part of what she had to deal with. I'm Ayman Ismail, and you're listening to Man Up. On this show, every week, we tell honest stories about our lives and investigate where we get our ideas about what it means to be a man. And the unfortunate truth is, my opinions don't really matter. But I really like to share them. Whether on this show or at home with friends, I always feel entitled to give my opinion as if the person I'm talking to was starving for my feedback. They rarely are, but that doesn't stop me. I usually think of it as harmless, but I'm wondering if that's because I'm not under the same amount of scrutiny as many women. Which is why I wanted to talk to Noor. Unfortunately, she knows better than most what it feels like to have everything she's doing under a close watch. When the Playboy story came out, it was an international story. Seriously. People were commenting on it from countries that couldn't even access her interview with the magazine. It wasn't the kind of photo shoot you might normally associate with Playboy. She's dressed in a leather jacket and jeans. She was one of many subjects of the Renegade spread, interviews with young professionals shaking up their industries. Her piece was titled, Noor Tagori Makes a Forceful Case for Modesty. She got more attention for what she was wearing than for what she wasn't.
Like, I remember when it came out, I was on a shoot for another series that I was working on. Mm-hmm. I put it out and I like put my phone away because I didn't think anything of it. And then obviously everything just exploded. But I just remember like for maybe 3 weeks straight, it was just all over the news all the time. And I really didn't think it was that serious.
The headline was first woman to wear hijab in a Playboy photo shoot. So
yeah,
I think it was purposefully.
Oh, of course. 100%. It was like. But there are also false reports about it. One thing I think that really kind of shook things up is that in like the Middle East, North Africa, Playboy itself, the website is blocked. So nobody could actually read the piece. So there were rumors about like what I was actually doing, how I was posing, and the lack of what I was wearing.
That's so corny.
So yeah, people were freaking out about that. But I mean, I think that most people who reacted the way that they did didn't actually read the piece. So to me, I'm like, and this is my way of thought for everything that I do is like, I know what my intentions are.
Had I or any Muslim man been featured, it would have been such a non-story.
Obviously.
So did you learn anything about the way you were being perceived?
The way I was perceived in the Muslim community is what I've been learning consistently over the last 7 years is that we struggle, just like every other sub-community struggles, with this concept of horizontal hostility, which is the people that you share similar values and goals with, that you identify with, you have this heightened sense of hostility and strangeness between you because you expect them to live their lives like you live yours. You expect them to adhere to your standards. And we don't treat people as individuals that way.
There's been so many opinion pieces written about it generally, about like what women in hijab should look like and how they should act, that people feel like they're entitled to say.
Because you wear it, that means like you must assume that you represent all of us.
And that kind of sucks.
So I'm 25 right now. When I was 18 years old, I posted a photo on Facebook, and it was a photo of me at an anchor desk. And I posted it on my private Facebook, and I said, this is what my dream looks like, and I'm going to make it
this
happen.
This is the Let Noor Shine hashtag.
The Let Noor Shine hashtag, right. Yes. And I posted that photo, and the reason I did so was because I had been saying that this is what I wanted to do since I was a kid, but what I never said before was that I was going to ever wear the hijab. Like, I was so adamant about never putting on the hijab, so that when I did put on the hijab, I was like, I can do this. I will be the first, because I had never seen it done before, and I wanted to do that for myself. And from there, I was really vocal about like my journey, and eventually I made my dream come true. But even when I made my dream come true, like I didn't really like hype it up and say anything like that, because I had gotten so much flack about this message, quote unquote.
So I do want to share something with you, right? So my sister, when I was growing up, she started wearing the hijab when she was like 5 years old. Right?
Wow.
She's never really lived her life ever without wearing the hijab. That's just, but something that our parents drilled into my head and 'cause two other brothers, all of our heads, was that we were supposed to protect her. So they said, okay, no, Ayman, it's your job as the brother to like protect her. And so very early on, one of the things that I had to unlearn from that period was that, look, I don't have to protect her. She's her own person. She's way smarter than I am. So I think that's one of the things that I believe has to be at play, because people feel like when we're always talking about hijab as this lofty idea, we see women wearing hijab and we project those ideas onto them.
Yeah, I think that that just happens with like women in general. I think that we society also feels very strongly about telling women how to dress and what to wear, and neglects the fact that there's choice in it. Like when I was working on my documentary Sold in America, one of the sex workers that I interviewed told me that she wrote a piece about how she related to Muslim women who wore the hijab more than anyone, because society was always focused on like telling us how to dress. I do think that when it's taught in a way of like, oh, you are responsible for protecting your sister, and your sister's also taught you are responsible for protecting your brother, and that is what siblings are supposed to do, then that, like, to me isn't problematic. I think that when you take away from your sister's strength and intellect, then there's that. But there is also a conversation that has to be said about like toxic masculinity and rape culture in general, of how women are perceived. And I think that in the conversation of you need to protect your sister, quote unquote, it's more like, how do you become an ally towards women in general as a whole?
Where I grew up was very diverse, but it was still urban. So my exposure for how people behaved and the way people acted and dressed was still limited. And it didn't really hit me until when I went to college, where I was really meeting.
Where'd you go?
I went to Rutgers. And I would catch myself making comments about how people dressed and the way that they behaved. And now that I'm thinking about, like, how that kind of came out of my mouth and why I felt like I was entitled to those opinions, I'm really worried about the effect that I had on those people. I'm feeling guilty because I don't want people to feel more insecure or more trapped.
But what kind of comments are we talking?
Like, for example, when I like first joined the MSA, there was someone who was wearing like a hijab and a sleeveless shirt. And I was thinking, oh, well, my sister was never really allowed to wear that. My mom, there's no way my mom is wrong. So let me say, ask her about it, right? But I was thinking, oh my God, what a horrible thing to say to somebody and just kind of walk into their space without knowing them and being like, hey, I think this about your outfit.
Yeah.
And like imposing that. So I'm thinking, what kind of effect did I have on people when I was using...
Totally.
Like using my... like fake kind of self.
I wish more people would
inflicted authority on
would
women,
would share that, because I know that you're not the only person who had a similar experience. Like, I just tuned out people. Like, I've had people say things. I have people say that about me all the time, every day, and I kind of just tune that out. I think, like, I don't know if you also if you remember a person, you should reach out to them and say it.
Yeah.
Tell him. I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like having those thoughts, and eventually I would say them and I wouldn't think anything of it. But now that we're having this conversation, I'm thinking, oh my God, like, I don't know if that like may have had an effect on someone's self-esteem.
Right.
I don't know if now they have like changed their lifestyle or changed their habits because of something that some asshole said to them in college.
Right. I know that if I did not have the support I have, I recognize that I'm very privileged in the support that I have around me with my family and my friends and my mentors, and I know that that would have an effect on people, and that has had an effect on people. And I get people who message me every single day telling me they're taking off their hijab because of things like that.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it penetrates very deep for people who are already struggling with it. Because that's the thing is, like, for one, it's personal. And two, it's like a consistent struggle. And so it's like,
you want everyone to have the support that you had.
I would love for everybody to have support that I have. Because if everybody had the support that I had, I don't think that we would have the hate comments and the trolls and the entitlement to for people to say what they feel like they need to say or they need to get off their chest. Like, that sense of entitlement says so much more about your character than it does the person that you're talking about. And I used to tell, like, my mom still responds to, like, trolls sometimes, but she used to respond to people. Absolutely. You can find some
that.
Of them somewhere.
I love that.
But she used to respond to people who would tell me, like, to take my hijab off, and she'd be like, okay, and if she does take it off, is it going to be on your hands? Are you the one responsible for that? And it's just like, are you not thinking things through? And you never know what people are going through. Like, I look at every single person, even the people who are the most vile to me, and I think, like, wow, I'm so sorry for whatever you're going through. And either I'm so sorry for whatever you're going through, or I have no idea what you're going through, and I really hope you're okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes I respond to people and say that. I'm like, they'll send me really horrible things, and I'll be like, I really hope you're okay.
On a recent episode, I opened up about how hard it is for me to let online harassment slide. When someone threatened me on Twitter, I answered it and tried to call their bluff. They got to me, probably because I'm not so great at keeping trolls out of my head. But it's something that Noor has gotten great at by necessity. It's like she's taken that pressure to be the perfect hijab-wearing Muslim and used it to her advantage. Talking to her is teaching me how that experience of being open to public commentary can be different for women.
So I did want to talk to you about the way that men perceive women, not because you are a hijab wearing woman and people talk about hijab when they really shouldn't, but because of your now award winning podcast Sold in America.
We shot the documentary and the podcast became the spinoff. And in the documentary, I went on this whole personal journey of exploring the sex trade. And one of the first trips we actually took was to Seattle, where I spent time with men who were arrested for buying sex in this class that taught them about toxic masculinity and dismantling patriarchy. And I thought it was genius and I thought it was really great. But then I realized that it was still problematic to an extent. There is different ways, though, to understand, like, how men perceive women in media and how we teach men about sex and about how they treat women in general. But going back to Sia for Sold in America, just like, it was so interesting because there's so, I mean, and we can go on forever about this, but there's so many complexities within how men perceive women, especially in today's like digital age.
But just describe that though. How do men see women?
We impose a lot of pressure on men as a society. I think men do a lot of that, where they're expected to have certain standards, to carry themselves a certain way, to bottle things up and keep things in turn. Like, you can't really talk about your feelings, or you can't talk about the things that you're going through, or what it means to actually be a man. And in turn, we end up putting way more pressure on women on how they have to carry that. Like, a lot of times, like, you go into relationships and these guys who, like, have never shared their feelings with their families because their families didn't grow up that way or have these conversations, just unload everything on their partner. And then it's like you expect your partner to be your therapist. And then everything that you know and have learned is from, like, what you've seen on TV or in porn, and it's just like things that are not real without acknowledging that they're not real. And so you're internalizing all of this toxicity and not knowing how to get it out.
Yeah.
And then further perpetuating, like, a culture of what it means to be a man and then dumping the responsibility on women.
So have you encountered that in your life?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I've encountered it.
So how, like, do you deal with that?
I think you deal with it with, like, being so open. I'm also, like, a journalist. I probe. I question why people think the way they think. Yeah, and I challenge people. And I see the way people get uncomfortable. And I also see the way that people, like, just sigh of relief because they're like, wow, I didn't realize I could be like that. Like, I didn't realize It's okay to like talk about these things.
I liked what you said about entitlement. I'm trying to trace back where that entitlement came from for me. How do you see things changing? How do we get men to feel less entitled?
By having conversations like this, absolutely. And I know that that's such a cop-out / cliche answer, but by having conversations like this that are held in a space like this, like it has to be something that is inclusive, that says, hey, I'm a part of the problem too. What can we do about it? Mm-hmm. And it's like, everybody has their defense up. So that's why I'm an open book. Like I will share anything and everything. I will share all of the stories. I'll tell you about everything. You just open up about a story that like a lot of people wouldn't feel comfortable doing. And when you put it on a podcast like this, people who are listening are going to be like, oh, wow, I didn't realize like that was me, too. I didn't realize I wouldn't be alone in this. So I think that is like a really great start. And then holding ourselves accountable and those around us accountable. I would find a group of friends and have a conversation about this and watch the magic happen when people open up because they finally feel like there's a space where they can. I think that's the best way to start. And I don't even think we're doing enough of that.
I felt a bit caught off guard by this conversation. Despite being the subject of ridiculous online harassment, having headlines written about her like, why as Muslims we can't support Noor Tagori, it's pretty cool to see how she's responded to that pressure with this much composure. The level of consistent scrutiny that Noor faces would have folded me in half. And what she said here really got to me, that it's not simply about saying less, but about understanding the effects of what we say and who we say it to. And that this is a conversation we should be having, especially between men. I mean, I was thinking that all I needed to do in a lot of these cases was to just shut up. But turns out, maybe I should speak up more. And that's the show. If you liked it, didn't like it, whatever, here at Man Up, we love getting emails and voicemails, and we'd love to hear from you too. Got thoughts on this week's episode, or maybe got an idea of what to talk about next? Leave a message at 805-626-8707. That's 805-MANUP07. Or just email us at manup@slate.com. If you like this episode, please consider supporting the kid and leave a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. I read them, believe me. And not only do we appreciate it, it also helps other people find the show. Man Up is hosted and written by me, Ayman Ismail. Our producers are Cameron Drews and Danielle Hewitt. Our executive producers are Jeffrey Bloomer and Lowen Liu. Gabriel Roth is the editorial director of Slate Podcasts. June Thomas is the senior managing producer. And TJ Raphael is the senior producer of Slate Podcasts. We'll be back next week with more Man Up.